Have you ever seen your pain as a portal to your salvation? Michael Brown has, and he shares both his journey and some brilliant insights in his two books, The Presence Process and Alchemy of the Heart. We join Michael for part two. I'm Robin Clare. Stay tuned. This is Tributaries. If you look at the idea of co-creation, which is the way a lot of people live their lives and feel a responsibility in that, is it a difficult idea or a circumstance to let go of that? And do you think that's even necessary?
Well, I believe in co-creation and that we're, you know, that I'm not, you know, I would say, you know, when I used to give presentations, which I haven't done for over a year, and I no longer facilitate people one-on-one, just to let you know, I no longer do that. But when I used to give a presentation, I used to always ask the question, or often ask the question, how many people in this room believe they create their own reality? Because it's that new age concept that I create my own reality. And of course, a whole lot of people would raise their hand because it's a wonderful, popular, empowering notion that I create my own reality. And I would say, well, if you create your own reality, what I'm obviously in your reality, you've created me. What is in my bag at the back of the room? If you really did create this reality that you're in, if you're the creator of it, you must know the contents of my bag. In fact, if I create my own reality as I walk through an airport, I must know what everybody's carrying, doing, thinking, saying, because I create my own reality. And that idea that we create our own reality, I think, is a very arrogant, misleading concept. In fact, it will lead ultimately to dictatorship. to me, I co-create the experience I'm having. You know, I co-create it with everyone around me. If I'm standing giving a presentation in the room, everyone in that room is equally part of manifesting that experience together. I'm not the one who created it just because I'm standing in the room. So I don't know if that's what you're talking about, but I don't believe I create my own reality, although I do believe I'm responsible for the quality of the experience I'm having, because the quality is totally determined by the way I feel about what's going on.
Yes.
And the way I feel about what's going on is determined by how I'm relating to my own emotional body and to what level I'm developing my felt awareness and taking responsibility for that. So I believe I'm responsible for the quality of my experience, but I think to say that I create it all and I'm completely responsible for everything, it sounds very empowering, but on one level it's very arrogant, because you and I, when we're doing this interview, we've both participated in creating this experience that's happening right now. I can't take responsibility for it, you know, and saying I did this. You know, that would be arrogant.
Yes. And that arrogance is really quite controlling. And being controlling is such an exhausting prospect.
And well, it usually comes from a controlling I call controlling a dysfunctional aspect of the mental body and sedating a dysfunctional aspect of the emotional body. And controlling, usually I find that when I'm trying to control something, it's because I'm afraid. And so if there's someone who has unintegrated fear within their emotional body, they will resort to control, because what control is really trying to do is to stop whatever it is that is unresolved and that happened in the past that was fearful from happening again in the future. And so I believe if I can control what's going on around me, if I can control people's behaviors, I can somehow stop that event from resurfacing. And the only reason I'm trying to do that is I can still feel the unintegrated resonance of that event within my emotional body. But once I integrate it and allow that energy to move on by becoming conscious of it and allowing that energetic circumstance to come to a point of completion or resolution, then all the controlling behavior that is coming out of that unintegrated circumstance immediately falls away. It's no longer even necessary.
Right, and an awareness that helps in the letting go of the control You also bring up in one of your books about not having faith in the causal point of the quality of our experience. And that's a beautiful place to be able to start from. But most people just, unfortunately, move out feeling totally alone. And I'm wondering if you can sort of help expand that for someone who might be feeling that.
What about not having faith in the causal point of the quality of the experience?
Yeah, which in my mind really allows for there's more at work than we are consciously aware of. And so there is this invisible support that really is going on, which leads back.
Absolutely. And to me, that's why, if there's only one thing that I can communicate to someone about this work, because this work actually is very, very simple, but we're so mentally complex beings at the moment, we need all sorts of explanation and understanding. But, if I am able to allow myself to, on a level of felt awareness, be with what is, in other words, let's go back to that example of someone coming to potentially buy my house and me thinking, I've got six cats, what am I going to do, where are we going to live? And I start going into that place, which is the mental story, and if I believe the story, oh, I'm going to lose my house, and I go into the physical behavior of, phoning the owner of the house and saying, what's going on, and maybe being rude to the people coming to the house or trying to make the house look like it's not a nice place to live or whatever reactive behavior I do, instead of going down that road, which is entering the effect of the fear or whatever it is that I'm feeling, if I go to the causal point, in other words, if I go to the feeling that's going on within me, whether it's fear, anger, or grief, and I allow myself to be with that feeling without messing with it, without deciding what the outcome is supposed to be, without deciding what this feeling is supposed to turn into and how long it's supposed to last, if I stop all that mental stuff, if I just make a practice of going to the causal point of the felt resonance of my experience, in other words, whenever I'm going through anything that's causing me discomfort, if I go to the causal point, which is the felt resonance, and just be with that feeling, it has consequences. And I don't have to know what the consequences are. My only task is to remain at the causal point throughout that experience. And what I will see is that the outcome will be greater than I could have planned, imagined, controlled, figured out, as if the entire universe has come together and orchestrated the experience and taken care of it on my behalf.
Yes.
So I can either go out on myself and believe the stories that I tell out of my experience and then go into the controlling or sedating behaviors to try and prevent what I think is going to happen on the basis of my stories. Or I can let all of that go and remain at the causal point. So if I enter a room, for example, I'm going out for the evening, and I walk into a room and I suddenly feel deeply uncomfortable about being or nervous in the room, I can do all sorts of mental, I can tell myself stories, these people don't like me, or I can start behaving in a certain way to try and appear confident. All these things, that will lead me into one place, because I'll be behaving out of fear, the outcome will be fearful. On the other hand, I can walk into that room, and if I feel those feelings of anxiety, if I rather just stay with the feeling and say, well, this feeling is valid because I'm having it. It's valid because I'm having it, so I'm going to be with this feeling. I'm not going to try and stop it, understand it, change my circumstances. I'm just going to be with this feeling. And what happens is that when we stay with that feeling, it eventually, there's an energetic opening and something wonderful happens, wonderful and unexpected, that we couldn't have orchestrated. And that really is the crux of all this work.
Yes.
The entire presence process is trying to teach us, the entire alchemy of the heart is trying to teach us, that if we just take care of our responsibility, which is to remain at the causal point of the quality of our experience, the universe really will facilitate the most magical encounters around us and will take care of things beyond our capacity to.
Yeah, and it's interesting how we are all in different places. I was really happy to get and both of your books at the same time, basically, because I was able to, you know, read through the presence process and then go right into the alchemy of the heart, because there was a little bit in, for me, in the presence process that was a little bit too linear and dogmatic. And, right. And, you know, we are in an age right now where lots of times, and definitely not in your book, The Presence Process, but there is a lot of ritual and ceremony that, as you say in your book, that window dresses and falsely glamorizes the healing yeah. arts, which, you know, happens when you feel like it's the process and not, yeah. you know, you don't yeah. move through it. And so yeah. it's important.
Well, you know, just to let you know, I also find the presence process very dogmatic when I reread it years after I'd written it.
Right. Well, of course,
I have... You know, gratefully got the permission, had the permission of the publisher to rewrite the book. So hopefully that dogmatic tone is now gone. You know, when you discover something like what I discovered in the presence process, you absolutely want to explain it to the nth degree, and really it becomes so important that everyone gets it absolutely right. And, when I wrote that book, we do it with best intent. Like when I discovered consciously connected breathing, you know, I wanted to run through the streets just shouting, why aren't you people, don't you know about this? Everyone start breathing now, you know, sort yourselves out. But actually, we have to realize that people come to what they require when they require it. We don't have to push them into it.
Exactly. And the opportunity yeah. you had to write the presence process was there for
yes.
unlimited number amount of reasons in the time. Yes. So it was actually perfect for the time it was happening.
Yes.
I'm glad you brought up the breathing, because I am with you in that I would join you running and jumping through the streets, because even though it is, you know, part of your process for the presence process, I really think that breath work can cure anything.
Well, you know, someone sent me a book that was written in 1930 by someone called Percival Someone, and they sent me the book. And in that book, he is saying you must bring yourself back into the moment. You must cleanse your physical, mental, and emotional state by connecting your in-breath and out-breath, and doing it for at least 10 minutes twice a day. So here I am saying do it for 15 minutes twice a day, and people going, wow, this is something new. But it's not new. It's nothing new about it.
No, but
we're just rediscovering these things.
Right, but it's also quite brilliant, I think, in that in the way you do recommend the breathing. I know with yogic breathing, there are many times and you have to breathe really deep and do this, but your recommendation for the breath work, I love, because it's simply that. It's just a breath in and out through the nose or through the mouth, yeah. one or the other. And so there's not a lot attached to it. It's just simply that. And it does create amazing change.
Yes. You know, this is the whole thing about the emotional work. Why, you know, most of the people that email me struggling with it are struggling because they're trying to approach it through a kind of mental complexity that they're used to. And actually, it's so simple. You know, breathe without pauses. You know, just breathe in and out like your cat or your dog does. And feel what's happening to you as if it's valid. You know, take your experience as being your truth, and they're such simple things. Actually, the emotional work is so simple, and I think that's why we struggle with it from a mental point of view, because the mental work we've done to this point is so deeply, you know, when one thinks about all the work on the macabre and all the chakras and, you know, all that stuff that we've gone through to get to the emotional work, that stuff is very, very complicated, exceedingly complicated. So it's no wonder that when we come to the emotional body, which requires courage more than anything else, and consistency and responsibility and compassion. But what it does not require is understanding and in complex thinking. That's not what the emotional body asks of us at all.
It's very true. That just sent me off into 100 different directions. So oxygen, you know, I feel like ozone is our best kept secret. You say oxygen is. But the other interesting piece of that is, you know, in your book, you do say when you're writing about the breath work that we use 13% of our lung capacity. It's known we use maybe 13% of our brain and then also 13% possibly of our DNA. And, you know, when they and the rest is junk DNA, that's to me like saying that quote that a weed is a plant we haven't figured out the purpose for yet.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, there is no, you know, I'm the same. I have certain places in my garden where certain plants can grow that people would normally call weeds because just because I don't know what that plant looks like and I may not find it particularly attractive, it doesn't mean it's not supposed to be there. And, you know, there was a time when we believed that if a plant grew in the garden, it was growing there for our benefit on some level. And it's the same, it's exactly the same with our experience and where I keep coming back to that every aspect of our experience is valid. Nothing is happening. If something happens, and it's one of my, in my own personal, you know, the way I live my life, if something happens to me, it's required. And that's the rule. You know, that is the rule. If something happens in my day, it's required. I then have a choice to react to it or respond to it. And in so doing, do I awaken through it or I go further into unconsciousness through it? But if it happens, it's absolutely required. So if my house gets burgled, it's required. It's not, of course it's not what I want, but a requirement and a want are two completely different things. And the emotional work is about learning to differentiate between what I want, which is driven by my unintegrated emotional stuff, and what I require, which is what comes to me for my emotional growth. And they're two different scenarios altogether. And it's very difficult for people to look back at their lives, at their past, and say, you know, I had this incident in which I was beaten up by a whole lot of people. Are you telling me that was required? And my answer is yes. If it happened, it was required. But if you want to find out why it was required, you have to integrate the emotional signature. It's the same for me looking back at my life, and I know the amount of pain and agony I went through. It's not what I wanted, but I know I can say without any doubt that it was required.
Right.
It was not what I wanted to go through, right?
How would you talk to someone about that? Because I'm getting that you don't feel like you need to relive past experiences in order to move forward. But there is an...
You absolutely do not have to relive the story or even the physical events that happened. This is the thing about this work. What we do is we go straight to the causal point. So you can call up, for example, let's take that example of, you know, I'll give you an example. When I was about 11 years old, I was terrorized by this man who was about, I mean, he looked like 20 foot tall to me, but he must have been about 6 foot six. And he was a nut. He was actually an insane person running around the neighborhood. And he used to pick on me because I think I was so terrified of him. You know, I used to just urinate in my pants whenever he appeared, and he used to chase me. And it was nearly 6 to 9 months before my family actually first laid eyes on him. So to them, it was an imaginary happening. It wasn't true. I was just freaking out, and they couldn't understand why until one day I was able to point him out. But now if I want to go back to that experience, I can tell the story of that to myself. If I want to integrate that experience, I can tell the story to myself. And as I start to tell the story, it's going to bring up the feeling of what happened. Then I must let go of the story immediately because it has no more purpose. The only purpose of the story is to bring the felt resonance of the event. And when that felt resonance arises, it's going to arise within my physical vehicle, in my body. Somewhere in my body, that feeling is going to resonate. My only task is to sit with that felt experience and allow it to be there. That is the kernel of this work. Then I'm at the causal point of that experience. And once I go through that and allow that energy to move to a point of completion, I will receive insight about what that was about for me particularly. And only at that point, and this is the difficult thing, only at the point of integrating the experience does one receive the insights about it. Otherwise, one just has some sort of understanding about it, which you can get from discussing it with a therapist. But if you actually want the insight about the event, then you need to integrate the energetic circumstances around the event. And all that's required, there's no requiring to relive it, to see it all, you know, to talk to someone about it. All that's required is to be able to resurrect the felt aspect of the experience, which is very simple to do. Just start telling the story and it comes up. Once the felt aspect is there somewhere in my body, then to allow myself to sit with that. And I don't have to sit with it till it's complete. I can just visit it every day for a few moments and make that part of my discipline, and at some point it will surface and come to a point of integration, and I will receive insight as to why I had to go through that experience and what role that played in my life and what I've gained from it.
Yes, it's quite brilliant, the subtle ways that ego keeps us holding on.
Yes.
A great adventure,
we stay
really.
In the story, we don't go to the causal point, and that's why people can stay in verbal therapy for years
exactly.
and years because
not
the story is never true.
Sure.
I mean, the story that I told myself, for example, about being chased around by this guy was never true. You know, when it finally unraveled itself, this was a mad person. He actually had nothing to do with me. He specifically trying to pick on Michael Brown. It wasn't his intention. He was just nuts, right?
Right,
and there
yes.
was something else that I had to resolve if the story is irrelevant to me.
Yeah.
The story is just the mental body, and when I talk about the story, I'm talking about using the mental body. The mental body is a passageway from the physical experience now to the causal point of any experience. So I can use the mental body as a passage as long as I move through it. In other words, I move through the story. I don't hold on to it.
Right.
The story has only validity in getting me to the felt resonance of that experience.
Michael, I was surprised to read, and I don't remember which book this was in, that you said that we want to align ourselves with cause and effect. I'm thinking we want to dissolve association with cause and effect. What do you think?
Well, I can't, you know, I can't remember what it is that I'm saying. I don't remember writing that we have to align ourselves with cause and effect. But, you know, what I do is I do align myself with it to the point that if I stay in a causal place in my experience, I don't have to be concerned about the effect. The effect is already spoken for. So I don't have to go around trying to figure out how to make things happen. And it's the same, for example, when I published the presence process. I didn't send out 100 manuscripts to 100 different publishers. I had an agreement with the universe that if I stayed at a causal point, I put my focus on writing that book and the feeling of it being published, the universe would present the publisher. And that's exactly what happened, is that 3 days after I finished the manuscript, exactly 3 days afterwards, someone walked up to me with a DVD of Eckhart Tolle and said, "Have you heard of Eckhart Tolle?" And I said, "No, I haven't." And they said, "Here, listen to this. This person seems to speak the same language as you." And I put the CD in and I recognized the language or what he was talking about. So I looked at the CD cover. I saw Namaste Publishing. I sent my introduction of my book off to Namaste Publishing. And within 24 hours, Constance emailed me back and said, "Send the rest of your book." I never sent out another manuscript.
Wonderful.
And I put that down to staying at the causal point of my experience.
Yes.
Which is really how I'm going to feel about what happens, right? That's my responsibility.
Right.
So in respect of that, yes, cause and effect is relevant, but more than that, no. I don't give it much thought.
In conclusion, Michael, I'd love if you could share your idea of appreciation as a creative technology.
Well, wow, appreciation. Well, appreciation has two words, you know, has two meanings to it. Again, this is another one of those perceptual tools where appreciation for us mostly, when we look at that word, we say, "I appreciate you" or "I appreciate this," means "I love this" or "I like this" or "this has meaning to me." But appreciation also has another meaning. In other words, if I have stocks and shares and they begin to appreciate, it means they begin to come more. And on that level, appreciation is a creative tool in that whatever we most appreciate, and what we most appreciate is what we're putting most attention to and investing most of our felt experience into. What we most appreciate is what we have most of in our life, you know, which is one of the reasons why one of my New Year's resolutions this year was to switch off the news. Not to watch the news anymore, because I don't want to appreciate that anymore. I don't appreciate the what we're told through the news. So I'm starting to be discerning about what I'm going to appreciate. If I want to watch something, then I'll put something on that's going to inspire me, and it's going to want to make me more creative or whatever. But I'm trying to be very discerning about what it is I'm appreciating, what it is I'm putting my attention to. Because whatever I put most of my attention to is going to be what most of my experience becomes about.
Right. And that could actually spin off to a question I skipped about how we've been talking about the now dilemma and really just being in the now. But you bring up in your book almost a how dilemma. Be aware, everyone, of what questions we ask ourselves and where we want to go.
Yes. As I always say, too, that the question is more important than the answer. We live in a seek and you will find, ask and you will receive. Not ask and go and get, but ask and you will receive. And I find most people are interested, you know, that email me and stuff, they're interested in the answers. They're not really interested in the questions. And staying in a causal place means I stay in the place of the question. For example, what is most beneficial for me? I don't then start thinking about what's most beneficial for me. I simply ask the question, what is most beneficial for me at this time? And I allow the universe to show me the answer. Ask and receive.
Beautifully said. I love speaking with Michael Brown. For anything tributaries, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. Podcasts are hopefully where you'd like them. If not, let us know. This is Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.